The Dramione Archives presents Bending Light by Scully Murphy. Chapter 1. Refraction. The deflection from a straight path undergone by a light ray in passing obliquely from one medium to another. Refraction occurs when light bends. Somewhere in central Italy. Draco Malfoy squinted at the road and accelerated sharply, the sound of the engine flaring across the lush countryside. There were exactly two good things about this situation, the weather and the motorcycle. One was hot and the other was fast, and both were keeping his mind off everything else. He shifted gears to take a deep curve, his body tilting towards the road. It wasn't the same as a broom, but it was as close as he was going to get. He sped out of the bend and flew up over the slight rise, managing to get both wheels off the ground for a gleeful second. Thudding back to earth with a little fishtail was an apt reminder that he couldn't just launch into the sky. His shoulders tensed, and he felt the darkness creeping in, so he pushed the bike even faster, the warm wind whipping past his face. Three things. Three fucking things. Having his own flat wasn't all that bad. Well, mostly his own flat. Theo had shown himself to be a very absentee roommate. He was already shagging at least three girls in town, and he always stayed over. Faux romantic bastard. Draco saw the village coming into view, so he slowed, glancing up at the warm walls of the buildings covering the hilltop ahead. The afternoon light slanted against them, creating a contrast with the deep umber shadows and glinting off the church spire at the very top of the hill. As he watched, a flock of birds took flight over the domed roof, creating a little poem in the sky. He supposed there were worse places to be exiled. Because he was, in fact, in exile. Even though they called it protection. Couldn't leave, couldn't communicate with his family or friends, couldn't use magic. He supposed that was the price, though, of being on the wrong side for so long. But he had switched, although it had been a near thing, standing there with his wand outstretched, staring down an incapacitated Dumbledore. Casting one spell would have meant protection for his family, and an enormous amount of power if, or when, the Dark Lord won this pitiful war. But Draco hadn't been able to do it. Hadn't been able to take the final, irreparable step. His body had rebelled even before his mind, and he'd watched his wand hand lower, as if it belonged to somebody else. "We can protect you, Draco," Dumbledore had called, low and urgent. "But you have to come. Now. They're almost here." Draco had nodded once, stepped forward, taken Dumbledore's outstretched hand, and set in motion everything that had brought him to this moment, in this place. A small, winding road leading up to an ancient Italian village. When he thought about it, and honestly he tried not to, he felt right about the choice, even though he was also deeply angry that he'd had to make it. The feeling of being a pawn in a game he barely understood had persisted, even after he'd switched to the good side. He flew around another bend, the bike's engine whining, his mind tracking back to those first nights in the safe house when some had looked at him with loathing, others with pity, but all with suspicion. He'd known then that he'd never be truly trusted, no matter what he did, that what he'd almost done would follow him for life. He revved the engine compulsively, pushing down hard on the gas, his teeth grinding, his fingers spasming on the handlebars. A nonna sitting in front of a farmhouse on the outskirts of the village looked up with a disapproving glare and waved her hand sharply. Draco reminded himself to relax and slow down. The engine quieted and he forced himself to breathe deeply. He was supposed to be blending, supposed to be a nice muggle university student, over for a summer job with his good friend Theo. Draco working in the local bookshop, since his Italian was passable, and Theo, who could get by on hand gestures and charisma, a waiter in one of the trattorias lining the tiny town's main piazza. "We can protect you there," Remus Lupin had explained when he'd outlined the plan before they'd left England. "Italy is very difficult for the Death Eaters to access. And although San Cipriano is largely a Muggle town, it's heavily warded because it sits on several ley lines." "There are a few places like it round the world," added Draco's cousin, Nymphadora. Tonks, as she liked to be called. He'd had the distinct impression they'd brought her into the room because they thought it would comfort him. But he'd never met her before in his life. "You'll be going to one or the other," she said. "All of you students who are of interest to Voldemort."
"So there will be others?" Draco had asked, still trying to get a grasp on what could be happening to him.
"Possibly," Lupin had said, glancing at Tonks.
"You'll have a partner, someone you'll know who's also going into protection. You'll live with them, watch each other's backs." "Notify the Order if the other one is taken or killed?" Draco had asked, with a weak version of his old sneer.
His mother's faint gasp from the corner of the room instantly chastising him. He shook his head and downshifted as the road narrowed. His mother. He was still in disbelief that Narcissa had agreed to be in on it all, that she had sat in that room planning along with members of the Order, and that she had managed to convince Lucius to go along with it. She'd even gone into protection too, but publicly, as a ministry prisoner. All staged and with her full cooperation, but it meant more stains that would never wash away. Draco had looked back at Lupin after apologising to Narcissa.
"Sorry, I know it's for the best, but there will be others beside my partner."
He rubbed his forehead. "Please don't tell me I'll be sharing a village of 500 people with Potter."
"The details haven't been determined yet," Tonks said, with a noisy exhale. "It's taken a lot of logistical work, but we're trying to spread you out as much as possible. So, as of now, it will just be you and your partner. We'll give you a flat, a job, the means to get around."
"Although not too far," Lupin had cut in quickly. "You won't be protected if you're outside the wards."
"And you'll lay low," Tonks had continued. "The Muggles in the village aren't to know you're not one of them."
"So, no magic," Draco had said heavily.
"No obvious magic," Tonks had replied. "We want you to have your wand at all times, just in case. But you can't do anything with it that will mark you out. So I'd recommend a mostly magic-free existence. Unless you want to be moving towns every few days, or end up stuck in a safe house for 3 months."
Draco had nodded slowly.
"And I'm assuming there will be some sort of crash course in Muggle studies?"
"Yeah," Tonks had said. "But you're clever, you'll pick it up. They're not all that different from us after all."
Her mouth had twisted in a facsimile of a smile, but her eyes had been cold. Brilliant. Even his cousin didn't believe he could change.
"San Cipriano is beautiful. It could be worse,"
Lupin had said, with a weary half-smile, after daring a glance at Tonks. Draco had just looked at him until the smile faded. But he glanced around as he cruised slowly towards the centre of town. He supposed it really could be worse. The village was beautiful, and he was enjoying his independence immensely. The motorcycle was an undeniable perk. He'd seen it sitting just off the square his second day in town, all sleek black metal and dark leather. A hand-lettered Vendessi sign slung over the handlebars. He'd lusted after it immediately, surprise mingling with disdain and a little fear. A Muggle machine. He'd been about to walk away when the owner had come out of the tabacchiera and seen him staring.
"Do you want to try it? Do you want to buy it?"
he'd asked in good-humoured Italian. To Draco's extreme shock, his mouth had said yes, he did want to try it. He, of course, had no idea how to work it, but with a quick lesson he'd taken to it.
"Ti viene naturale,"
as the owner had exclaimed. And after a breathless cruise around town, Draco had used a significant portion of his expenses budget to buy the bike on the spot. It was so much like flying. And after nearly 2 weeks, he was even getting marginally more used to living without magic. The only charms he regularly performed were a wordless language clarifier if he got a tricky request at the bookshop, and a stabilising charm on the bike. He also hadn't seen anyone else magical, and supposed he and Theo were going to have the town to themselves. This suited Draco. He knew the presence of other witches and wizards would intrude on the calm, predictable existence he had created here, and he was loath to give it up. After the last year's hell, boredom was truly a luxury, and he found himself savouring the long hours in the shop, followed by quiet evenings at home with nothing but a book for company. Not to mention that anyone else they might send here would probably hate him on principle. Of course, none of this stopped Theo from making impassioned arguments every few nights about why Draco should go with him to the local disco, and assist him in working his way through St. Cipriano's female population. But Draco always put him off. Why did Theo require a second? And the last thing Draco needed was a complication of any kind, but especially that kind. Funny that he was thinking just this as he saw her. It was the dress and the flowers, both a bright orange-red that caught his eye, and the long, slim legs that kept it. Her legs and her stride, swift and confident, straw hat bobbing, her free arm swinging. The dress was also very short, and Draco's gaze travelled up to where it just skimmed the back of her upper thighs, swishing against the smooth flesh there. He swallowed and unconsciously slowed the bike, so that he was idling along behind her. She passed the open door of a taverna, where some local men were lounging and smoking, an occurrence they did not let go by without comment. Draco saw the quick flash of a defined jaw and determined chin as she tossed her head at them. He grinned and then followed, something in her gesture niggling at his mind, then making him realise that his slow creep behind her was just as lecherous as the men's catcalling. He shook his head and was just about to speed away, when she swung abruptly into the cafe, waving and calling out a greeting. Her hat still concealed her face, and Draco craned his neck, trying to get a better look. Maybe she worked there? Maybe he'd go and investigate later. Or, he revved the bike and shook his head again, maybe he'd be smart and keep the fuck away.
"Come out tonight," Theo said, looking up from the mirror where he was carefully arranging his hair.
"No, thanks."
Draco took a sip of wine and barely glanced up from his book.
"Bloody old woman," Theo muttered.
Draco put up two lazy fingers in his direction, and Theo returned the salute before resuming his primping.
"You really should come, though," he said. "There's a new girl in town. Maurizio said she's molto bella, and works at the cafe. Inglese, too."
Draco's head snapped up.
"I think I saw her today. A red dress."
"Don't know."
Theo left the mirror and picked up a pack of cigarettes. He pulled one out and went to sit in one of the large swing-out windows that dominated their flat sitting room.
"Never saw her myself."
His lighter flicked to life and his eyes were keen on Draco.
"But maybe she'll be there tonight?"
Draco schooled his features and lifted a shoulder. He hadn't even seen her face, and Maurizio had notoriously low standards. Probably why he and Theo got on so well.
"I'm not interested."
"Suit yourself."
Theo blew out a cloud of smoke.
"But don't be a cunt when I get her first."
Draco didn't look up. Theo inhaled again, and Draco could feel his gaze lingering.
"Why aren't you interested, though?"
he asked.
"Is it the muggle thing?"
Draco closed his book.
"No."
Theo raised his eyebrows when Draco didn't continue. Draco shrugged again.
"I'm not my parents."
Even though he and Theo had been in the same house for 6 years, and their families had run in the same circles, they really didn't know each other all that well. Draco felt a stab of melancholy. He wished Blaze were here instead.
Even though you were still calling people mudbloods and carrying out commission for the Dark Lord as of last month, Theo snorted.
Fuck you. It's not like I could say no.
Draco forcibly pushed away a memory of some of the Death Eater persuasion tactics he'd witnessed.
Or blow my cover by suddenly acting like a muggle lover.
Theo hopped off the windowsill.
So you're not opposed to muggle girls? Or is it boys?
Or both?
His eyebrows waggled and he tilted his head to the side.
Girls.
Draco rolled his eyes and Theo shrugged with a smile.
And I'm not opposed in theory, although I still don't understand how you manage to conceal your magic from them constantly.
Leave my wand in my bag, mostly. Or in my trouser pocket once she gets them off me.
Theo's eyebrows danced again. Draco pushed up and went to refill his wine glass, shaking his head as he went.
So you're not opposed in theory. We're stuck in this place for who knows how long. There are some truly fine physical specimens just ripe for the plucking. Gods, I love Italian girls.
Theo laid his hand over his heart.
And you're passably attractive.
He squinted at Draco, who made another rude gesture at him.
So why the fuck not?
I don't want complications, Draco said,
downing half his glass of really very good red.
And no collateral.
Collateral?
Draco's mind flitted back again to a favourite of the Dark Lord's strategies.
Leverage,
he said to Theo.
Using someone or something against you.
He twirled his wine glass and looked down into the ruby liquid.
For example, you kill the headmaster, or I torture and kill your mother.
Theo blanched, and Draco felt a humourless smile across his face.
But it doesn't have to be anything as dramatic as all that. It could just as easily be disfiguring the pretty muggle girl you've been sleeping with all summer. Or killing her family. It just seems unsporting when it's not their fight.
He tossed back the rest of his wine. Theo stared at Draco fixedly for a few beats.
You don't think they'll find us here, though, do you?
His voice was quiet in the echoing silence of their high-ceilinged flat.
The Order. They'll protect us. They'd get us out before...
He nodded as if to reassure himself.
No. Yes, well, probably, Draco shrugged again. But the fact is that we don't know what's going to happen. Maybe we'll die tomorrow in a Death Eater raid, or maybe Potter's charmed skin will somehow blast the Dark Lord into oblivion again.
Theo pulled out another cigarette, and lit it and inhaled deeply. He offered the pack to Draco, who tapped one out, then caught the lighter Theo tossed at him.
All the better to live like there's no tomorrow, then,
Theo quipped. But his face was still pale.
Sure, Draco said on an inhale. You can look at it that way. And I don't think the grudge against you is quite as strong as it is against me. But I'm not taking any chances.
He blew out a satisfying cloud and felt the corner of his lip curl up.
You have fun tonight, though.
Chapter 2. Hermione Granger hummed as she ran a white cloth over the gleaming curves of the chrome espresso machine, polishing it to an even brighter shine. The morning rush was over, and she didn't expect another until the waiters came in to take their pre-shift Café Lungos around 4, shortly after which she'd be off for the day. She moved the cloth to the pitted marble counter, surprised at how much she'd taken to this job. She hadn't thought she would at first. Had even argued rather vociferously that she should be placed in a bookshop or an apothecary or something interesting like that instead. But being a barista suited her. She found the precision of the task satisfying, the measuring, tamping and steaming, and she enjoyed the little flourish of service she provided with each order. In fact, she could lose herself in the ritual quite effectively. There had been whole hours over the last few days when she hadn't thought about her situation at all. Her situation. She frowned and put the cloth down, then lifted the grinder lid to check the bean level. It seemed almost surreal that just last week she'd been in a war room in a safe house, being informed that she'd be shipping off to a small town in Italy for her safety.
"Like, witness protection!" Tonks exclaimed.
Harry, Ron and Hermione had just looked at her silently until Lupin had spoken.
"It's not just Harry that's of interest to the Dark Lord. You know that," he said quietly. "He's aware of your value."
His eyes had flicked to Ron and then Hermione.
"To Harry and to the Order. And he's very adept at exploiting those types of weaknesses."
"But I want to fight," Ron had exclaimed, slapping the table. "I don't want to be hidden away like a child."
"But you are a child," Lupin had said gently. "And until you're of age, we'll continue to protect you. Your homes are too vulnerable right now, so this is the best plan we've got."
Hermione had listened to Lupin and Tonks explain what they could of what had happened next. Hiding them in the last places anyone would look, laying low, no magic, blending with the Muggle locals. And of course the Golden Trio would be split up for safety. Hermione was certain the Order would have Harry under particularly high security somewhere, and it was frankly for the best that she and Ron would be spending some time apart. She shook her head as she removed the tray of steaming bicchieri from the dishwasher and began stacking them on the bar. Tonks had also explained that they'd each have a partner, although Hermione's hadn't shown up yet. She was hoping it would at least be someone she could tolerate on a daily basis. It was too much to hope to get Ginny, but somebody like Luna wouldn't be bad. Hermione knew Luna was part of the programme, and in fact, after running scenarios over in her mind the last few nights when she couldn't sleep, she was fairly certain it would be Luna, and had begun preparing herself mentally for a summer of odd notions and strange half-conversations. She smiled faintly as she came out from behind the bar to gather newspapers and neaten the seating area. Luna would be fine. She wondered where they'd put her to work, though. Maybe the flower shop, or the funny little lapidary shop on the square. She wondered how good Luna's Italian was. Hermione was picking up more every day, but still needed to lean on a language charm fairly heavily. If she'd gone to France, it would have been a lot easier. But Italy was beautiful, and for now, much safer. Lupin and Tonks had explained that much to her once they told her exactly where she was going, even though they'd had to keep more than she'd like from her as well. But she did understand, and after years of dangerous half-truths from Dumbledore, was appreciative of any information she could get. And it was good to feel like someone was at least trying to protect them for once. Even Hermione's parents had received covert safety measures, although her concern for them long-term still weighed on her mind. The bell on the door tinkled, and Hermione looked up to greet a customer, her mind switching back to the practical. She chatted with the older man, set him up outside with an espresso and a panino, and then drifted back in to rearrange the bouquet of bright red peonies she'd bought into the cafe yesterday, her mind running back to its previous track. Would Luna arrive today? And would there be others? It seemed logistically impossible that only two people would be assigned to San Cipriano, but so far she hadn't seen anyone else. And the harried witch who had escorted her here, after Lupin and Tonks had been suddenly called away on order business, hadn't known anything. Hermione heard a shout at greeting and snapped out of her reverie, just as a group of young, black-suited waiters tumbled into the cafe, led by the darkly handsome Maurizio, who had already asked her out. Two? No, three times. Her afternoon rush had arrived.
"Buongiorno," she called to the group,
already starting the grinder and pulling out glasses. Everyone would need at least two shots, and about half a pound of sugar.
Our petrol,
Maurizio had explained, in heavily accented English, the first day when Hermione's eyes had widened at the amount of white granules that were disappearing into his tiny cup. And according to Giancarlo, the cafe owner, the flock would come by again at 7 p.m. for a pick-me-up, and then once more after work. Hermione wondered how they ever slept.
"You come to the disco tonight?" Maurizio asked,
leaning on the bar and training the full power of his liquid brown eyes and darkly fringed lashes on her. He was absolutely gorgeous, and he knew it. Hermione was sure he'd been through every woman in town, and probably several neighbouring villages too. "Won't you be working, though?" she said with a smile. She enjoyed flirting with him, almost despite herself.
"It goes late," he waved a hand. "I will be there 10, 11, but only if you go too."
He tilted his chin and looked up at her. "No, I don't think so," Hermione laughed at the hand-dog expression that came over his face. "I have to be here early to open tomorrow." She spread her hands wide. Other than the self-preserving aspects of avoiding an entanglement with someone like Maurizio, she wasn't quite sure dancing at a disco was appropriate in her circumstances.
"You will break my heart."
Maurizio shook his head as the other waiters, each of them a dapper mix of dark hair and white teeth, called out encouragements to Hermione, and or insults to their friend. She laughed again and gave him a smile. "Maybe another night." The men cheered in response and slapped their glasses down on the bar, calling out their goodbyes as they headed to the string of bistros that lined the piazza. Hermione waved at Maurizio, and he backed out slowly, his hand over his heart.
"Alla prossima,"
he said soulfully, winking at her before turning away. Hermione couldn't help but enjoy the scene as she walked home from the cafe after her shift ended. The warm light, the uneven cobblestones, the zip of a Vespa as it sped by. All so different from her life back home, and so lovely. It never left her that this was a time of danger and uncertainty, that they were in the middle of an almost war, and she'd often been arrested by crippling moments of fear for her friends, her parents, and the future. But that all made her somehow more determined to also take joy in little moments and small things, like walking home after a satisfying day's work to her light-filled flat. After a few minutes, she reached the door to her building. She unlocked it and pushed through the giant wooden panel before ascending the long, curving staircase to the third floor. Entering the flat carefully, always cautious, she could tell immediately that something was different. She looked around, taking in a duffel bag near the kitchen table and a sheaf of sunflowers wrapped in brown paper on the counter. A faint, sweet scent lingered in the air, and the sound of the shower rushed faintly from down the hall. It seemed her partner had arrived. Hermione felt a little surge of nerves and busied herself, finding a vase for the flowers and throwing open a window against the late afternoon heat. She wondered if Luna had eaten and set some water on the hob to boil for the pasta. She had some good salad leaves left from the vegetable market in the small refrigerator too. That would make a nice supper. And perhaps Luna would like a cup of tea as well. Or was it too hot for tea? She was standing there debating internally, staring at the kettle, when a tread sounded in the hall. She turned with a smile, words of welcome on her lips. But the words died, and she actually felt the smile slide off of her face as she realised who was standing there. Lavender Brown! Hermione could hear the shock from her brain infusing her words. Shock that was turning quickly to anger. What are you doing here?
I'm your partner, Lavender said simply, twiddling the end of a towel as she wrapped around her hair.
Hermione blinked several times, words failing to form in her mouth. Lavender took a half step forward.
It's awkward, I know, she started. Awkward?
Hermione gave an angry snort.
It's bloody ridiculous.
Lavender blew out her breath and cut her eyes to the side.
I know it's a shock. I've had a few days to get used to it, and I still...
She stopped and put her palms up.
But here we are.
Why do you even need protection?
Hermione practically shouted, thinking seriously about the enchanted communication galleon sitting in a heavily warded box in her bedside drawer. But Lupin had said it was supposed to be for emergencies only. And while this was infuriating, she wasn't sure it quite rose to that level. She tapped her fingers on the counter and glared.
I guess my, association with Ron? At least that's what they said.
Lavender's cheeks reddened.
Anyway, she said, looking around, the flat is really cute.
I'm going for a walk,
Hermione interrupted, turning her back on Lavender's resigned face and pushing back out the door. Leaving may have been the coward's way out, but the walk was helping. Hermione had headed to the left, up the street that wound through the centre of town, to where the church capped the hill. It was extremely steep, especially near the top, and she was walking fast and breathing hard. She could feel the fire on her initial anger blowing out with each step. Who was she really angry with, anyway? It wasn't actually Lavender. She was more pathetic than anything. The people who had sent her? They had bigger things to worry about than school grudges. Ron? She had been angry with him, yes, and terribly hurt, for months while he paraded their relationship in front of her. But she wasn't really angry about that anymore, and hadn't been for some time. In fact, other than distaste and a sort of lingering irritation that Ron would be so insensitive, she barely felt anything about that anymore. Something had changed over those months. It was like her focus had adjusted, and she'd seen Ron clearly for the first time. His insecurities and need to be puffed up, the resentment often bubbling just below the surface, the mean streak that could snap to life in a flash. And she realised she wasn't interested in any of that, at least not in a life partner. She and Ron would always be friends. They'd been through too much together, and Harry would always connect them. But she'd come to know with certainty that they'd never work as a couple. It had been quite freeing, actually. Funnily enough, she'd come to this realisation just as he'd broken it off with Lavender, and turned to Hermione as if she'd been waiting in the wings for him with folded hands. Wanker. She still remembered his face when he tried to snog her the last day before term ended. She'd put her hand up to stop him, and he'd been so surprised.
What are you doing?
The incredulity on his confused face was palpable.
I'm sorry, Ron, she said. I just don't feel that way about you anymore.
Don't feel... But it's been years, and I'm free now.
His self-righteous tone and the acknowledgement that he'd known that she'd fancied him for so long had set something off in her.
Yes, it's been years. Years of you being a complete asshole, ignoring me, insulting me, hurting me deliberately because you were too much of a coward to stick your neck out and tell me you returned my feelings.
What do you mean?
He sputtered. His face had gotten that splotchy look.
The Yule Ball. The way you behaved after Ginny told you about Victor. The last 6 months.
He'd stalked away rather than argue with her, and it had been all tense silences and stilted conversations between them since. It truly was a good thing that they were separated this summer. Maybe he'd meet someone else and get it out of his system so that they could be freely friendly again. Eventually. So no. She wasn't angry at anyone anymore, but still, Lavender Brown. Hermione leaned against the fortified wall that circled the piazza at the top of the town and looked out over the rolling acres of fields and vineyards with a sigh. How were she and Lavender Brown, her giggling, ditzy, divination-obsessed, boy-crazy polar opposite, going to live together, alone, for several months? What would they talk about? Maybe the war? What it felt like to be separated from everything they knew? Or the strangeness of what they were living through? Hermione shook her head and pushed off the wall to start the downhill route back to the flat. A bit ashamed of her earlier reaction. A better start would probably be accepting things and trying to work with what she'd been given. She didn't have to be best friends with Lavender, but she owed it to everyone, to the situation, to be cordial. Her mind began to whir with the start of a plan.
"Where are you working?" she asked as soon as she stepped back through the flat door.
Lavender looked up from where she was sitting and stirring something very similar to what Hermione had been planning for her dinner with Luna.
"The gelateria," she said shortly.
"I suspected as much, and that's perfect," Hermione nodded once. Lavender just looked puzzled.
"I work at the cafe. You know, espresso, panini, that sort of thing," Hermione explained. "My hours are very early. I open the place most days, and the gelateria opens at, what, 11 o'clock? Or noon?"
"I was told to be there at 11 tomorrow."
"And it doesn't close until 9 or 10 p.m, correct?"
"I think so."
"So we should barely see each other," Hermione explained. "I'll be gone in the mornings while you're here, and when you're working the evenings, I'll have the flat to myself. I go to bed early most nights, so you won't see me for long when you come home. We can have labelled shelves in the fridge and all that." She felt her spirits rising. This might be a way to make it work. But as she spoke, she saw that Lavender's face was falling.
Hermione stopped her excited chatter.
"What?"
"I had sort of hoped we could try to be friends," Lavender said as quietly after a long pause.
"After all, you won. You have him now. You had him all along." She looked up and her eyes were shiny with tears. "And I'm okay with that."
"Oh, arse." Hermione closed her eyes and took a deep breath.
"We're not actually together."
Lavender made a little sound.
"I don't like him like that anymore. Okay? So can we just put all that aside?"
Hermione opened her eyes to see the most incredible array of emotions cross Lavender's face. Incredulity, anger, resignation, and then finally a sort of exasperation. A very humorless laugh escaped Lavender's lips and she rubbed her forehead.
"What?"
Hermione felt irritated again.
I spent the last few months, and especially the last 3 days, meditating and burning sage, and rationalising and trying to accept the fact that you and Ron are perfect for each other, destined to be together, and that's why he didn't want me. And now you're telling me you don't like him that way."
Lavender's huge blue eyes widened even further, and another slightly hysterical laugh escaped her lips. 100 replies cycled through Hermione's mind, but the thing that came out was,
"Well, he's sort of a selfish arse, wouldn't you agree?"
There was the perfect silence in the flat, but for the bubbling of the boiling water as Lavender looked at Hermione, her face totally still. Then she threw back her head and broke into a peal of real, ringing laughter. Hermione kept a straight face for about 2 seconds before she lost it too.
"It really is," Lavender gasped after several moments, wiping the underside of her eye and shaking her head.
She caught Hermione's eye and Hermione erupted again. It was several minutes before they were both calm.
"All right," Hermione said when she could speak again. All right, let's start over. She put out her hand. Welcome, she said. The flat is really cute, and you're going to love the town.